This feature of the Science News Radio Network is coming to you from our studios in Dallas, Texas. Science News is on the air right now.
This is the promise of tomorrow, where people and industry keep up with the business of emerging and nanotechnologies. The fields covered in this series of programs will include energy, defense, aerospace, medicine, semiconductors, and more. For the next hour, Colonel Mason will introduce his experts, and you'll be on the cutting edge of the promise of tomorrow.
And yes, it's so good to have you back again as we explore the exciting world of the business of emerging science, nanotechnology. Open Innovation. Those of you listening on radio can also hear us commercial-free online anytime at promiseoftomorrow.biz. In the first half of the program, we have Dr. Melissa Flagg. She's currently founder and CEO of Flagg Consulting and just recently Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for Research in the Office of the Assistant Secretary of Defense Research and Engineering within the Department of Defense. She also provided oversight for the Department of Defense laboratories and the long-term strategic direction of the department's science and technology program. And we're going to visit the Den of Strangers, get more wisdom from somebody a lot of us never heard of, visit our fountain of useless information we have here on the set in the second half of the program, and of course, at the end of the program, listener comments and the voice of reason. Melissa is going to be keynoting, along with Kay Goss, of the IEEE International Conference on Homeland Security Technologies. That's going to be April 25th and 26th in Boston. You can learn more about that at our website, promiseoftomorrow.biz. On the right-hand side of your screen, you will see a link. Well, right now, let's get to our interview with Dr. Flagg. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to the Science News Radio Network special presentation, Promise of Tomorrow, with Colonel Mason. Those of you listening on radio can also hear us commercial-free online anytime, webcast, at promiseoftomorrow.biz. Okay, we're going to go to the phones right now. We have with us Dr. Melissa Flagg. She's founder and CEO of Flagg Consulting. And before that, was Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for Research at the Office of the Secretary of Defense, Assistant Secretary of Defense, and she provided oversight of DOD laboratories and long-term strategic direction of the department's S&T program. She's going to be speaking at the IEEE Homeland Security Technology Conference that's going on the 25th and 26th of April, and keynote speaker, as a matter of fact. So we're very, very proud to have her with us. Thank you for coming on the program, Dr. Flagg.
Thank you.
When you and I spoke offline, you said, you know, you're still preparing your remarks. So if I ask you to give us a preview about what you're going to be talking about, you said to try not to pin you down too much. But you've got quite a background as Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for Research and Science and Technology. So give us an idea about what are some of the concerns that you have.
I think one of the really big concerns that I have after spending 15 months really diving into the early applied and advanced technologies in the Department of Defense is that over the last few decades, we have separated basic science so much from our applied research that I worry that sometimes engineers only work with sort of the technologies that are proven and the technologies that we know exist. And that places a lot of constraints on us, I believe, as engineers. I'd like to find ways to increase the surface area around basic science to allow engineers and scientists to move back and forth across what are the big challenges that if we had another way of attacking the problem, if we could come at it orthogonally, then we could really make an impact and allow us to throw those big, hard problems back to the scientists and have that sort of harvesting and collaboration move much more rapidly because they're in closer proximity.
Oh, Okay, I think I understand what you're saying. What you're saying is that people are relying on current technologies and not willing to delve deeper into unanswered questions. Is that what you're saying?
Well, let me give you an example. I think big data is a great example. Mm-hmm. We've gone down this road of collecting more and more data, and we have a relatively fixed set of approaches for how we analyze that data. We need it to be cleaned, we need it to be standardized, we need it to be in certain formats that allow us to compare different sets of data. But what if we asked the data scientists to go back to first principles and begin to think if there are ways to actually compare fundamentally different data sets that don't require us to standardize the data, that don't require us to have it all in sort of a single format, that would allow us to federate vastly different approaches to data and to still be able to gather reliable, reproducible results from that. I think this, it's really a question about informing the basic scientists of what the real problems are and making sure that the engineers understand the breakthroughs as soon as they happen. So it's simply making those relationships closer and not confining or constraining or making the basic scientists applied or forcing the engineers to slow down to the pace of whenever those breakthroughs happen, but just making sure that that intersection between them is much more porous.
So it's kind of a communication snag that you're talking about. In other words, we're being flooded with data, and so they try to boil the data down, try to find out what is significant, and sometimes miss the mark, and not really find the real solutions to the problems that are really necessary. And so there needs to be a sort of a bridge there between those who really have the problems and those who are trying to find the solutions. Is that it?
Well, I think that historically we've felt like basic science, in order to not be pulled into the applied space and to truly continue to explore the limits of the laws of nature, which really create the possibility space for all of the engineering and applied work that we do, that we needed to leave them alone and not pull them into the engineering or solution space. I would suggest that if we look at the moonshot and we look at the Manhattan Project, some of the most relevant and exciting basic science that we did in this country was done in an environment where it was informed by a huge challenge, but it wasn't constrained. And so I just want to make sure that we have a relationship that allows our scientists to be more informed by the problems the engineers are facing, and that the engineers are poised to be able to flex and to alter their approaches to those solutions as rapidly as the breakthroughs happen in basic science.
So you say that we've kind of gotten away from the wide open, let the science flow attitude that we had during the Manhattan Project, the development of the nuclear nuclear bomb, and of course the moonshot, the space project that really opened up all whole new vistas for us here, and then we've gotten sort of constrained and shoehorned, so to speak, into a more of a routine instead of a wide open, wide eyed acceptance of all possibilities.
Wide open, but also informed by the problems, right? Informed by the public good, informed by what the national security and defense community need. So in the Defense Department, there's something called the Third Offset Strategy that has been discussed by the Deputy Secretary of Defense, Bob Work, who's still there with General Mattis, or Secretary Mattis, as I guess he is now. And it really talked about looking at how you get out of a race where you're just simply trying to do things faster or a little bit better than the adversary, and that you step back and you take an orthogonal approach. I really believe that the source of true orthogonal approaches lie in the first principles, lie in going all the way back to the basic science. We live in a world where technology is widely proliferated, and we don't necessarily have a significant advantage in the existing technology space. But where we may have an advantage is this incredible creativity and this ability that we have to take a huge problem and to drive an entire community all the way from physicists and biologists to mechanical engineers and electrical engineers to a solution. And that was proven out in these historical approaches to things like the Manhattan Project and the Moonshot, where we had a real informed challenge that we were going after. So it wasn't just simply basic scientists in isolation without understanding what the public good was, without understanding what the public needed or expected of them. But they weren't constrained to the approach they would take or to sort of an incrementalism of what grant would get funded. And I think that it's this relationship between basic science and engineering that's so beautiful and that I think has become siloed. And so I believe that if we're going to be competitive in a world where we have a lot of parity in our technological space, we have to rethink this relationship, and we have to celebrate this relationship between the basic science that looks far into the future and the engineering that makes that real, that makes that usable.
So there was a clear goal with the Manhattan Project. We had to build a better weapon, something that would end the war in a hurry. And there was a clear goal with getting to the moon and, getting a man to the moon safely and return to Earth. And that goal allowed all sorts of innovative thinking. And you're saying that the new problems that face us today, we need to have that same sort of innovative thinking out there about being able to translate or at least transmit that idea to those who are gathering the data and working on the situations. Is that where...
Absolutely.
Okay,
absolutely.
So what then would be the big goal, you know, of today? I mean, we've got, I'm sure that maybe one of the first things to mind might be global warming, although there's so many naysayers in that. I think some of them are coming around. Missile defense, I mean, Ronald Reagan says that he would like to be able to destroy intercontinental ballistic missiles before they reach their target, and that has been an elusive goal. Joe Biden said he wants to conquer cancer. Give us some ideas about where are some of these major directions we should be taking.
Well, I think that we have some really interesting problems. Some of them are purely technical, but I would suggest that our biggest problems really lie in our lack of actually deciding what our priorities are. If I look back over the last sort of 20 years, we've tended to move away from prioritizing certain things, which requires appetite suppression, and it requires that you're going to give up some things, right? We've moved to sets of priorities, right, where every conflict is equal, where global terrorism and Iran and North Korea and China and Russia and all of the variations of conflict that these types of situations bring forward, they're all equally important. And I think until we really consider what is it that America wants to be in the world, right, and what is national security in the public good, in the service of the taxpayer and the public, until we decide the most important things to be good at, we will always have this spread of a thousand things that are equally important. When you make 1,000 things equally important, you set your technology community, your science and engineering community up to fail, in my opinion, because there will never be enough resources to actually conquer all 1,000 priorities. And so I do believe that from a strategic perspective, leadership needs to get back to making hard decisions. And they need to get back to having real conversations with our citizenry about the results of those decisions. I think it's become very difficult to make choices. And that we're not, because we do everything from a top-down approach, post-1945, we shifted from a federalist approach to governance in this country that allowed a lot more decision-making at the state level. We moved to a much more unitary approach of governance post-World War II. We find ourselves in a situation now where there's some tension between this sort of unitary top-down approach and a more bottoms-up federalist approach. And I think for the things that we do from the top down, those can seem very removed and very distant from the taxpayer. So we do have to, in my opinion, really begin to stimulate conversations with our citizenry about what our priorities actually are. And then we have to make some hard choices. If you do that, the science and engineering community will deliver. I have no doubt about that. We've proven it time and time again. But it's the fact that we have 1,000 choices to make that are equally prioritized by 1,000 different leaders, I think that caused a lot of challenges for the technology community. We spread ourselves thin over a lot of areas. I think one other area that I find really interesting that I think is going to continue to be a significant challenge, most especially for the Homeland Security area, and that is really this balance between the ability to increasingly locate, track, target, and understand at the individual level, and the difficulties that we actually have in actually anonymizing data at this point, balancing that with what it means to support the values of this country that center around individual liberty and privacy, those are going to be significant challenges. And I think historically the technology community has said, we just develop whatever's possible, and you policymakers decide whether it's appropriate to use or not. And we sort of excuse ourselves of responsibility. And I would suggest that most especially in the case of Homeland Security and national security, we are the people who will be providing the foundation of that balance between tracking and targeting and securing individuals and protecting individual liberty. And we should spend energy at that intersection of how you do both. I do believe that's a huge challenge that can be informed and improved by technology, and that could really improve the lives of Americans and the way we do security going forward. And I think that largely technologists have excused themselves from that responsibility.
Wow, that's, that's fascinating. In other words, go after every problem, and when you try to try to serve all problems, you're really getting up not serving well any problem. So what you need to do is to prioritize and look at the things that really are necessary, and devote energy like the point of a spear in that direction, and have everybody pulling in the same way on a few major problems.
I think that if you look traditionally at when we've done incredibly big things, that's been the approach. It doesn't mean that we narrow the solution space, right? We pick what's important. We let people take many, many different paths to getting there, and we see what works best. And, if you look at the moonshot, what else came out of it? Nobody was working on Teflon so that we could have nonstick cooking pans, right? Mm-hmm. But we got Teflon from our space program. Nobody was thinking about Velcro and the way that, frankly, it would change most of our lives. We probably use Velcro every day now. Nobody was thinking about creating Velcro. They were thinking about the space program. And yet, all of these things came out of having a concerted effort to a big problem. And we had decided that was the number one most important thing. I think right now we have a lot of most important things, and leadership's uncomfortable saying, I'm not going to deliver everything. I'm going to deliver these two things. We have, I think in defense, especially, had a period of peace that's very unusual in our history. And it allowed us to play a role as a global hegemon that was unusual and that we could afford in that moment, but that's going to become harder to afford as we go forward. So it means we have to think about who do we want to be in the world, and what are we willing to give up and to pay for that. And once you make that decision, the science and engineering community can get you there, but you have to make that decision.
Well, as CEO of Flag Consulting, what if somebody asks you that question? What are the two or three directions that you might propose that we put as top priorities and let everything else kind of come along as it does?
Well, to me, I think we have to redefine what homeland security and national security means. I don't think we can afford to be a global hegemon. This is a personal opinion. This is just Melissa Flagg. But I don't think it's affordable. And so I think we have to have a national conversation about what homeland defense and national security mean. What are the most important things for people? I think if you were to ask my mom and dad in southern Missouri, the number one most important thing for them would be, please don't let someone hit me with a nuclear bomb, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I grew up in the 70s, and so I watched a lot of movies on the day after and the nuclear winter and all of these things. I was a Cold War kid. And so that also informs the things that are visceral to me, I'm sure. I would love to hear what millennials think of this, right? I would love to hear what the next generation behind the millennials thinks of this. What is the future that you want to live in? And what is the role that you want your country to play in that future? And I think we have to have that conversation. I think the idea that we expect people like me, or even just leadership, to have pat answers and that we change those answers every 4 years is a real problem.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe we have to go back to real civil dialogue, which is messy and uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to really find out what is it we want to be in the world. Because to me, you can't pick the priority. I mean, I can tell you my big priority would probably be make sure nobody can hit me with a nuclear weapon.
Yeah.
But that's not going to be everybody's priority. Before I decide I'm right, I'd like to know and understand the full landscape.
Well, the big criticism of the Department of Homeland Security coming from all different directions is that they don't do anything, and that the only thing significant they did do was the cameras at the airport that undress us and make sure that we're not carrying any dangerous weapons. And that's the only thing that the Department of Homeland Security has really done that is the least way significant. And their other solutions are to take all this materiel and all these half tracks and high tech weapons and give them locally to police departments and things like that, so that they can fight Homeland Security, provide Homeland Security on a local basis, and that has been their solution there. Then there's the complaints that the police are operating like a paramilitary organizations. Do you see that the Homeland Security can improve or let's say dispel those criticisms?
I think. So I'll start with, Homeland Security has a really hard job. And so I'm very respectful of the fact that it's easy to criticize when you're standing on the outside looking in at someone who has a really hard job. The Department of Defense focuses their efforts outside of the domestic, United States. And so it's a little bit easier, I think, for the Department of Defense to communicate with the public about what it does and to have them feel comfortable with it.
Okay, Melissa, we're going to want to know more about that hard job for Homeland Security, but right now we have to take a break at the half hour. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to the Science News Radio Network special presentation, Promise of Tomorrow, with Colonel Mason. Those of you listening on radio can also hear us commercial-free online anytime, webcast, at promiseoftomorrow.biz. Okay, as we walk to the break at the half hour, we're going to pause at the door of the Den of Strangers, where we keep locked away all of the wisdom of mankind. Who in the Den of Strangers will we meet today?
Catherine Graham. Even we, it seems, underestimated for a long time the capacity of government to hide and distort the truth.